Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with veteran Kansas City-based jazz saxophonist, teacher, and visionary Christopher Burnett on the 2024 album called Originals and the upcoming Lee Summit Jazz Fest. Mr. Burnett is a great friend to Neon Jazz, the Kansas City jazz world, and the global community of musicians at large. We caught up with him to discuss his latest and impressive 2024 release called Originals. It is an homage to his family, and he's joined by a stellar group of Kansas City talents like vibraphonist Greb Carroll, bassist Gerald Spates, guitarist Will Matthews, and the veteran pianist Roger Wilder. We also discuss his involvement in the first annual Lee Summit Jazz Festival taking place on June 22nd, 2024. It's always a joy to catch up with this cat in real time. Dig this interview.
Mr. Burnett.
Good to see you. Good to see you, Joe.
What is up, man? Nice to see you as always.
Man, I'm just here waiting for this famous interview with Joe Domino.
I've been waiting to talk to you for a long time. I am so glad to see Originals out. You're on the you're going to be a part of the Lee Summit Jazz Fest.
And yes.
Business as usual for Mr. Burnett.
Yes, sir. Jazz music and the like.
I love it, man. I love it. So,
I'm trying to find a good place for my reception not go away.
Yeah, I understand. I have to do that hustle all the time.
Okay, so here we go.
Yeah.
And I'm just using my phone rather than the computer, tethered to the computer.
Okay, yeah, no, you're fine. Yeah, you're fine. We're in this glorified modern era where we can do these little Jetsons maneuvers very easily.
Exactly, man.
It's cool. So, well, man, I got to tell you, all of those interviews that I did in 2020, sometimes I'll bring it up in interviews, but I think about it more now. I just kept saying in the back of my mind, I can't wait till I catch up with these cats to like see what they're doing, to see live music, to see new albums, and to see both of these come together. And you're always busy with the youth and just overall, you're always very busy. So to see examples of you out in the world that's like back at it after all of that time of uncertainty is just, it's regenerative. I love it.
Wow. Well, and I've been watching you as well. And you've just expanded your base into, you're working with Michael over at All About Jazz and you're just, and the fact that you're doing the videos, that even makes it even more engaging. They've always been engaging, but now you get to see the artists that you may not know. I know a lot of the local cats, so.
Yeah.
But I appreciate your time. I appreciate your interest in what we got going on here.
Totally.
Yeah.
So we can hop in with the first things first, which is the brand new album, Originals. I always love your artwork. It's always clean and mesmerizing and fun. You got this tree growing with a stark blue background. That's kind of the way I love to paint anyway, as you can see with this. I love that vibe. I totally love it. It just pops out. So talk to me about Originals. This just sounds on paper, and when you get the album, it just sounds like it was fun to be involved with.
It really was, and it's a musical love letter to my family.
Yeah.
And that's where all the music came from. It's a long-form composition in six parts, and harmonically and melodically, the music ties together, starting from the very beginning, finally, all the way to yesteryears. And you could play it straight through, which we plan to do at Lee Summit, but we might stop. You never know. It might be a million degrees out there and we need a drink of water or something.
Yeah,
but
right.
But actually, it was a chance that you take, you know, as an artist to write something like that because it's so personal, number one. Number two, you don't know how it's going to be received because the theme of it was for my family. And I wanted to do something that honored past relatives who I never met.
Yeah.
Because I was displaced from them by generations, you know, obviously. And that generation, those past ancestors, I really learned a lot about them 20 years ago when we came back home, 23 years ago. We came back home to the Kansas City area after a military career because records were very hard to come by. And with the advent of, you were talking about technology.
Yeah.
I was able to find out a lot about my ancestors, and that's all in the liner notes. If you go to our website, you can download the liner notes, and the story in the background is all there about that. And also for the current living family members.
Yeah.
And even for the family members that my wife and I, we won't meet, they'll extend on the continuum past our time. And then life family, which I consider you and every one of my jazz comrades, life family, because we connected on this journey and intersected in this music called jazz. So it's about family and the musicians. Can I talk about the musicians a little
bit? Please do. Absolutely.
Oh, man. I'm telling you what, the piano player, his name is Roger Wilder.
Yeah.
And I've known Roger Wilder since 2001. He was still relatively new in Kansas City himself, and I met him at the Grand Emporium. The Jazz Ambassadors were doing a fundraiser, and they called it Battle of the Saxes. The saxophone players were Bobby Watson, Hal Melia, Gerald Dunn, and Todd Wilkinson.
Wow.
What a crew, huh?
Wow.
And the rhythm section was Roger Wilder on piano, Gerald Spates on bass, and Tommy Ruskin on drums.
Wow. Man, I miss Tommy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So on a set break, I really liked the piano. I was digging what the piano player was doing. And and at the set break, one of the first people I met was Todd Wilkinson. And that's another story.
Yeah.
And I come up to Todd and said hi. And he said, "Hey, how are you doing? Glad you can make it, Chris, blah, blah, blah." Then I asked him, I said, "Who's the piano player?" He said, "Oh, he's a guy from New York. He's relatively new himself." And so I went and introduced myself. I had these little cards made up. I said, "My name is Chris Burnett. I was wondering, would you play in my quartet? I'm trying to start a quartet." And Roger low-key goes, "Yeah, sure, man." And from then on, basically, he's on all of my albums. Wow. He's my piano player of choice, but he's everybody's piano player of choice in a sense, because he's on so many different things. And the bass player of this group is Gerald Spates.
Yeah.
And I just thought Gerald would be too busy, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I wrote him a message saying, "Gerald, I'm putting together a new quartet of original music. It's going to be my originals quartet. And I need a bass player. Do you have a student or somebody that you could recommend?" I didn't even think, "Hey, Gerald, would you want to do this?" Because I was thinking, "Oh, he's too busy. You know, that's Gerald. He's too busy." So a couple of days, of course, busy. He wrote back to me and said, "I'm interested in doing that." And I wrote back, "Bass player search over."
That's awesome.
So, and then the drummer is a new drummer, a young drummer, not necessarily new. Her name is Morgan Rogers.
Okay.
And Morgan, I first heard Morgan, through the Jazz Academy, Clarence Smith's Jazz Academy. I was judging his 18th and Vine Jazz Festival last year, and he had his Jazz Academy groups play, and I heard the drummer. I was going like, "Who's that drummer? That kid's good." And and I said that to Clarence, and he just grinned at me. He goes, "Yeah, she looks like a kid, but she's not a kid. She's sitting and helping out. Our drummer was sick or something like that, and she has helped out with the Academy, and she was in it." And he said, "That's Morgan." And so I went up to her and I said, would you play in my quartet? And she goes, "What? Really? Yeah." And was really excited about it. So we have just like every generation in that quartet, and everyone really was excited about the music. When I gave them the music and I talked to them about the vision of the album and why I'm doing it, one of the things I said, number one, was, it's original music. It's to document this stage of my life, and it's to keep creating music while I'm still playing at a high level. Because no matter who you are, as you get older, you will actually diminish in skill. Just the thing. I've just seen it happen to everybody. And one of the things that I wanted to do is capture, while I'm still physically doing well and playing at a high level, and I have something to say, is to capture it. I don't know
I've got other music that I've written and I want to record, but just see how that goes as I keep going. And surprisingly, I was a little bit nervous about this album. The last couple of albums we put out were standards. One was a lot of special arrangements. I really took some time and care and wrote out these nice arrangements of some of my favorite standards, what I consider standards. They aren't all Tin Pan Alley songs, but they're standards like Windows, Chicoria, Jubim, Corcovado, things like that. And then added supplemental instruments because I like orchestrating for other things in different colors. And the Originals album has those colors in there too. We've got my wife, Terry Anderson Burnett on flute and Professor Frida Proctor on flute. And then Greg Carroll on vibes. And then two other guests, Willie Thornton on Willie Myers Thornton on tenor sax on the last song Yesteryears, and Will Matthews from the Basie Band on guitar on that tune.
Yeah.
So it's a diverse thing, but you can play it quartet, but you can play it with that augmented. And I wanted to add those different colors on the recording because there are other things that I was hearing. And at this point, I like to do as many things that Terry and I can do together too.
Yeah.
You know, she's a flute player. We met in the Army as musicians. So,
yeah.
But I got a review from Plastic Sack, Bill Brownlee.
Yeah.
And he's a good jazz critic and he's objective, even though we're friendly and he knows who I am and stuff like that. If it stunk, he would say it would definitely. Yeah. But he seemed to like it. It was a positive thing. And at this point in my life, and I think we talked about this before, at this point in my life, I do music in a whole different way than I thought about it, maybe even 20 years ago, much less 40 years ago. You know, I'm at a place where I don't have anything to prove, not like you ever do,
sure.
But you're not trying to be recognized in that context. And it's really nice when someone you think a lot of, you let them listen to your work and they say, wow, it's really nice. Thank you. I really like what you did there, blah, 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 blah. I put together this press kit for the album, and I think I sent that to you.
Yeah.
But it has like all of the, it has session photos from when we did the recording. It has the scores. It has, of course, the WAV files and the album artwork and stuff like that, and the liner notes. So anyone that I send that to, they can go there and they can really learn about the music. They can see the sheet music, because a lot of times when I'm listening to music, and I've got really good ears, I can hear pitches and notes and things like that. But it's really cool when I can actually see what the composer or arranger did, as opposed to hear something, because you can hear something and think it's this chord and then it has this name. But if you see it, it might have a different name, be the same notes and have a different function.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to share was what I've come to as an artist and composer in terms of I have my own harmonic voice, I think, and melodic voice. And Roger was talking about that in the when we were working on the music. And he's brilliant, you know. And I told him, I said, I have a knack to write really pretty melodies. I can write melodies that people can attach to, but I also want to make sure that I'm doing something harmonically that's in the tradition, but gives enough latitude and freedom to the artist that you can improvise. All of those melodies, they're not bebop melodies. There's some things are a little tricky thing. The samba's a little tricky for me because it's where it puts it in the key, but I heard it in that key.
Yeah.
But what I wanted this music to be is a vehicle for the improvisers. And I wrote specifically for Roger, Gerald, and myself, and Morgan. And I knew I could do things on the bass with Gerald that I couldn't always do. I could write him way up there and he's going to play and tune and have the technique to pull that off, because I've heard him do it so many times.
Yeah.
And where we rehearse the music, Gerald said, "Man, wait a minute, this is a little bit tough here." I said, "Don't even say that. I've heard you play that kind of stuff." And he's grinned at me. Yeah, but it was just joy with all them. And Roger, we've learned in our relationship, he's learned me enough to know that what I'm going for is a fluidity.
Yeah.
Once he understands my concept, and if I want a specific thing, I'll let him know. But if there's latitude, you know, he tries to stay right within what I'm doing. But sometimes I have to say, no, I want you to, you see what I'm doing, just create. I don't want to restrict you at all.
Yeah.
Example is the second cut always. The first letter of each one of these compositions spell family.
Yeah.
Right. If you think about it. Yeah. And always it's the second one, and it goes right in after finally. Finally, then always, and it just goes right in with a rubato interlude that's based upon the framework of the harmonic stuff that we're going to do in the tune always, but leaving his imagination to whatever he wants to create to set me up to come in.
Yeah.
And then he concludes the coda. The head is improvised too. So the head is improvised. Then you have the body of the tune where I play melody over the changes that we're going to improvise over. Then we improvise. And then he improvises a out head coda of the tune. So it's a lot different than AABA standard, oh, head, bridge, head. Then you're out, you're playing head tunes or something like that, you know. But it has that format. Like the very first tune, finally, the flutes and the bass and the piano playing the that part, that's the head of the tune.
Yeah.
And then when I come in, when the rhythm section has motion, that's setting up improvisations again. And I tried to do that with everything. Lately is the tune that has three segments like that. There's a part that we play a unison melody together after the vamp intro. Then we improvise. Roger and I improvise. Then we have a kicker that goes into Gerald's solo. And then after Gerald's solo, we play this vamp together, a play on this vamp together while Morgan is improvising to take the tune out. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And Will Matthews, really quick, just Will Matthews was on tour in Japan with the Basie band, and I gave him yesteryears, and I said, Will, what do you think of this tune? And he said he was practicing in the hotel room. He says, I want to play on this, you know. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, great. When will you be back? So, well, we're going to record the 4th and 5th of December. And he said, yeah, well, I'll be back by the 5th, no problem. So I said, okay, how much will you charge to do that? And he says, Chris, I'm not charging you anything. You know, as much as we've done together and you helped me with my website, et cetera, we've been friends all this time. I just want to play. Let me see if I can do justice. So I sent him the music, see if he can do it justice. And he just really did a great deal. And he came up with the thing we used as an alternate take. He said, I had an idea, because it ended up on the 5th when he was supposed to come and record with us. He was sick from the tour and he needed a couple of days. You know, he was saying, man, and I could hear the congestion in his head when he was talking. He was going, oh, man, I don't know if I can do it. I said, okay, don't worry about it. I'll talk to Will Crane and see if you can come in. I said, but we're gonna put our stuff down and leave space for you. That's what we did. We just played and left space for him. Then he just came in like a pro. Of course, he's got like 3 Grammys.
Yeah.
So they do all those. So recording studio chops, he has them. So he just went in and did that. And I didn't even go in during the section because I had something else. I was teaching my kids in my studio and I could not be there. And I didn't need to be there because Will Crane is a great producer and everything else.
Yeah.
So they told me, I said, Will, how'd it go? He goes, oh, yeah, it went great. You know, like, what'd you expect? You know, or something like that. And he said he did something else too. And I'll send you both takes. So after he got things together and he sent it to me to see if I liked it, I was going like, whoa, I never would have thought to put that rhythm guitar part in there. The first, the thing blank with him just playing and no rhythm added on there, that was good. So up to 0 hour of trying to release it and get things set up in the distributor, the aggregate, put all your stuff there and choose where it's going to go, I couldn't make my mind up. So I put that on as an alternate take, an additional track of that. I couldn't leave it out. It was so good what he did.
Yeah.
And to think about it, for a cat like that to use his initiative
and say, oh man, I really like this, but I'd like to put this on there too. Sure. I think this would go. That shows that he was getting into the music. The music resonated with him at a certain level. And the guy who plays the tenor on there with me, and we're playing the unison tenor, unison saxophone sometimes, and back and forth sometimes. His name is Willie Myers Thornton. He was my very first private student.
Wow.
Like 40 years ago. Yeah.
Wow. Now
he's the director of the, he's a department chair over at Paseo Academy of Fine and Performing Arts, the music guy. He's a choral guy. He does all the stuff that's great. He just got back from taking his kids someplace, DC or something like that. And they did really well and won this thing with St. Louis. They did something like that. But for he and I to be able to document something, I thought that was pretty special because he's like my little brother in a sense.
Are you kidding? Know? That's awesome. That's a great story. And that's a part of family. That's what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Everybody on there is my musical family, you know, and I got Terry, my family.
Of course. Of course.
Now you're talking about the Lee Summit Jazz Festival.
Yes.
I was really surprised about that. One of the people who plays in the Lee Summit Jazz Orchestra, one of the sax players, he used to teach at Lincoln Prep Academy, a guy named Jason Beta.
Okay.
And yeah, he's a great saxophone player and teacher and stuff like that. And that Lee Summit Jazz Orchestra has a bunch of really great educators in it and some cats. They have some people who are just jazz musicians that play with them as well. So it's a pro big band, and they started it. I think they started it before the pandemic or around in that time.
Yeah.
And they've just kept going, and now they've got support about it. It shows you about what I look at their story is a great example of building infrastructure. And that's one of the mandates that we're all on. You're building infrastructure for jazz. They're doing it. And everyone, if we do that on our scenes, we build an economy, a living wage economy. And that's what I see happening in this generations that are living now. People are not waiting for permission to do things. They're creating the environment that they want to have and exist. You know, that's one of the things that I'm really excited about in terms of what we're doing with the youth jazz program.
Yeah.
Youth jazz program was invited to play there, and my quartet was invited to play along with some other great Kansas City artists. And it's really just exciting to see that going on. Speaking of the youth jazz program, the last time that you interviewed me about that was, I think it was a pandemic or something.
Yeah, we were in the thick of it.
Five seasons, five albums are out.
Yeah.
And 23, 22, 21, 20, and 19. And we're in our sixth season.
Wow.
It's a rebuild. But the proud thing about that is, we are living what we were preaching and hoping. Remember, we were saying that instead of one or two great young musicians hitting the scene every year or every couple of years, there should be a lot more.
Yeah.
Well, my friend, we've realized that.
Yes.
If you look at all the young cats out there, and you go to our youth jazz site and go to our alumni page, you'll see their picture there.
Yeah.
Most of them. And then they've learned about networking with each other. They've become, you know, across going to school. Like it used to be all the cats that went to this school or that school hung out together, and they do that. You know, like the people are maybe 40, 50 now. When I first got here, all those cats that went to UMKC, they hung out with each other. All the cats that went to KU hung out with each other. Now it's like all of these youth jazz young next generation artists, they come from all of those places because all those directors support what we're doing in context because it's so different and unique.
Yeah.
So they interact with each other across all that. And then when they get on the scene, they're cross-pollinating, and then they're playing with their elders, they're getting mentored. It's just beautiful what is happening.
Yeah.
You know, in addition to the program, and we only do that 4 months a year, April, May, June, and July.
Yeah.
But all year around, what we've started, we have an alumni network of them. And if in our off season or if there's a performance that someone wants youth jazz, I have a network of them who want to be called. I'll say, do you want me to bother you if we have a gig that for alumni? oh, I'm too busy or I'm on the East Coast now or something like that. But the ones that say yes, I have this list so I can put together an alumni ensemble. And during the course of the season, we talk to them about etiquette, how you carry yourself, what you should expect, what's reasonable pay, what isn't reasonable pay, what's reasonable treatment, and what really isn't reasonable professional treatment, and how to set yourself up as a business to do that. And it isn't just me. Yeah. It's not me. It's everybody on this scene. Yeah. If you go there and say our clinicians go to that page, you'll see everybody you know, on there that's dealing with this music. And I've just been able to use the chops, the army chops, the administrative chops, the leadership chops, the organizational chops in a way that some of my friends and I'm really good friends with this. We've remained really good friends. The guy that's, he's actually like running the instrumental division at the Armed Forces School of Music now. And that's what he did in the Army, but they actually have a different type of curriculum that's modern than in our time. And we had about an hour and a half conversation about a week ago.
Yeah.
And he caught me up to speed. He goes, yeah, you're doing some really great things. I said, well, you're doing great things because I can see it in when I interact with any of the service bands. But what he was talking about is similar to what I see here on the Kansas City scene. We have to modernize things, take advantage of the technology, like what you're doing right now by we're doing this by video. Sure. And you're videoing it. It's really cool that you're able to do that.
Yeah.
And it's like Star Trek when I was growing up.
I know. It is. It's awesome.
But yeah.
It's beautiful. You know, I got to say the one thing. Your sound is this, all of us that have jazz brains have a sound that we gravitate to. You know, there's like, when I get in the car, that's when I like to listen to it. Like I get my son Miles in here and we're in jazz mode. So when we get in the car, there's a mode and it's you. It's like, it's this modern with room to grow, but a bebop backbone. There's just a good feeling. It's just like, it's just the swing. It's what, you know, it's swing, man. And I love it. So I love this album and I'm going to play favorites because I do. I always dig your album and I run it out, but ARC is always doing such good work. So at the end of the day, are you doing vinyl? You're pressing vinyl, aren't you?
Well, if you'll notice the length of my last three albums, they are actually done with what you said in mind, the planning, meticulous planning, in a sense, to if there is demand for it, or at some point I can make a limited edition vinyl. I was talking with Bobby Watson about that, and I got one of his that he made limited edition, and he's got a real great company that he went through to do that. And I'm thinking about doing it, but the way I look at the way I look at music, this might be backwards, Joe. You mentioned ARC. Now, I told you that ARC, the catalog, is being archived by the Kansas History Museum, the Historical Society. So think about us as jazz artists or jazz people. Mainly, we're documenting. That's what we're doing. We're documenting our work for posterity. We're not trying to be Taylor Swift famous. Yeah. Or we know that's rarely going to happen.
Yeah.
But we're just doing it for the sake of art. So once you've got that established in my mind, once you have established like, okay, my work is not going to die. It'll be here like when the relatives I was talking about that I'll never meet, if they are interested, they'll be able to find some source material of my remnants here saying, this is what he did. This is what it sounded like, et cetera, because everybody on the label that has recordings, they said, yes, yes, yes. So we made sure that they got digital copies of things. They got hard copies of artifacts like the poster from the ARC Week in the Blue Room in 2015. Yeah. I gave them that poster. I gave them other things, you know, and a copy of the catalog. So they have all of the titles so that they can archive the fact that that's what happened and everything else. But one thing about ARC that I think is really very, very important and significant. It is the fact that everyone retains ownership of their work, and it puts the reality of the recording industry into perspective for artists like myself, really, because I'm a composer, and you said something about my sound and everything. I'm blown away that you say that, because you listen to musicians from all over the world, sure, at all strata of the industry, from the newest independent person to the big heavyweight cats, you know, and for it to resonate with you is a testament to a guy I think I introduced you to, Marcus Hampton.
Yeah.
And mentors of mine when I was in the service. I have a quote on my website. If you go to burnettmusic.biz and scroll down, there's a quote that Mark told me when I was in Germany with him in 1977, a young 21-year-old kid who could read music and all this blah, 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 and copy things. And he said, Chris, the point is not, and he emphasized not to sound like Cannonball, not to sound like Train, not to sound like Bert, but to sound like you.
Yes.
Anything else in this music is missing the point. He said, that's not the goal of this music.
Yep.
If you get competent and find your own voice, that's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, use the things that motivate you about what they do, but find you in there. And I think that takes a while to live to get that, don't you?
Right. 100%.
You know, I had to have something to say.
Yeah. Well, Miles talked about that.
It had took to have something to say.
Yeah. Miles talked about how long it took for him to find his voice. And you hear that all the time from young players. Yeah, maybe it's not time. I don't have my voice. But you've been around. You have a fine-tuned ear. I mean, you've listened. You're a label owner.
Yes.
You're teaching the youth. You're getting a cacophony of sounds around you all the time. So if you take that into the organ grinder, so to speak, man, I got to tell you real quick. I'm still blown away by this. I saw Matthew Whitaker at the Folly. Oh my God. I couldn't believe what I saw. Like,
yeah,
it was unreal. Like, I have never been in the room with genius like that. And it was like Stevie Wonder was live. I was going to say
that's genius level stuff, man. That's like knock you over genius stuff, you know?
It was unreal. I mean, he had all of us, like, we didn't know how to react. We had our water in our eyes, our hands wouldn't stop clapping. We were standing up, sitting down. I mean, he was going in between the Hammond and his piano, and he had the electronic keys on top. The band was grooving. You could hear him shouting out like the old cats, like Bud Powell used to shout over the keys.
Yeah.
And it was the old and new world, but he was just happy. He was this incubated, like, sphere of light that no one will touch. The level of happiness, no one's going to do it. And that's the thing that's so promising. It was like a young Quincy Jones, and he just emitted just positivity, and no one's going to dent that. I think that's the thing. His music is something, but his soul, his essence, wow, man, it was like to bathe in that for a couple hours was just restored every shred of
regenerative. Man.
All the baloney we have to hear with politics and the nonsense in this world, you get a little Matthew Whitaker in there and everything regrows.
I'm telling you, man. And you hear that spirit in this music.
Yeah.
It's regenerative that. And it has different ranges of the voice, and there's a place that can resonate with everyone.
Yeah.
That's what I found, at least. I mean, I don't worry about the going back to Hamp's quote. I don't worry about, I'm teaching young people and I'm working with some really, really talented. So like in about 3 or 4 years, you're going to hear about these kids who are eighth graders going to ninth graders and ninth graders going to 10th graders. Okay, Joe, they can play all of the scales. They understand that. They can play the technique on the saxophone. And we're studying applied theory, so they understand chord progression and movement and melodic development. And then they're not hung up on, like, taking a PDF, copying people's licks. They're hung up on creating. They understand that that's a good way to get voices. And the way I do with my students, rather than have them do an enormous amount of transcribing when they're at this young stage, I make them take the real book and play heads.
Yeah.
And learn those heads and be able to play those melodies, because that's the source material.
Yeah.
Not someone else's machinations or manipulations of melodic development. I want them to learn how to do that, how to enclose a chord, like F, A, C, E, F, enclose the third with B flat, G sharp, A, you know, be able to build melodies that way and play across changes and understand how those variations work as a matter of course.
Yeah.
And the only way you can do that is build competencies. And that's a big mandate of anyone working with young people. Is make them competent musicians, then sell your PDFs, you know, or whatever you're giving them. But if they're not competent, you're just cramming a bunch of stuff in their head, and they think they're doing jazz and they're not. And then they get to be older, then they get bitter. Or like Hamp was telling me, and I learned this myself at about 21 years old. I would practice Charlie Parker stuff so much and listen and blah blah blah, that I found myself just playing like that. And I said, oh, no, I can't. So I just stopped doing that.
Yeah.
Like, if you'll notice, like, I can play really fast, because there was a time in my life, even when I came back here, I'd figure some stuff out. So you want to just go.
Yeah.
You just go all the time. You have all this to say. But then I started thinking, I was going like, yeah, you can do that. But what are you communicating, Chris? What are you trying to communicate? Are you playing above people's heads? What are you doing in relationship with the ensemble around you? So now my tack, if you listen to originals, you'll hear all of us in this way. It's an ensemble. It's like this organism.
Yep.
When I'm playing my improvisation, I'm improvising, of course, I'm leading it, but I'm improvising using everything that's happening around me.
Uh-huh.
And these guys are playing in Gallagher. They're playing at that level that everyone does that. Once we set that tone, that's what happens. If you hear the trio play when Roger's improvising and Gerald's playing and Morgan's playing, it becomes this other thing that centers around this conversation they're having. And my through composed material is an interjection into that conversation that hopefully complements it.
Absolutely.
And it's used as complementary resource material. And it's not overly constructed so that it's detracting from the improvisation, because everyone there improvises. Gerald, man, holy smokes. Roger.
Yeah.
And Morgan, I like her feel. She has a broad background. She's just not a jazz player. She plays in a punk band.
Yeah.
So she has no boundaries.
Yeah.
So, and I like that. And I tell her, break stuff.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah. Break it.
Before this digital door closes on us here, I want to make sure ARC is the best place to go to get originals, to find out all of the beautiful catalog of work that you have. June 22nd is the first annual Lee Summit Jazz Fest. You will be a part of that with your groups and with the bevy of great cats like the Back Alley Brass, Ebony Fondren.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be a wonderful day, and I can't wait to be there to see it. And I just want to say, Chris, as always, you're one of my favorite cats in the world. I love your stuff. I love what you do. And I know sometimes we're supposed to be objective, but man, I get in here and I wear it out. My goal is to just break the CD. Like you said, just if I can break it by playing it too much, amen, I'm good.
Man, I really appreciate you too, Joe. And thank you very much. It's so encouraging. Even at this stage, not looking for validation or anything like that, but the encouragement from the scene and the cats and the people who know helps you know that you're contributing, doing something that keeps things going.
100%.
I think we all can succeed, man. I think we all can. Yeah.
We got so that spirit of Matthew Whitaker. Just spread the light, man. Just get it out there in the world.
Exactly.
I love it. Chris, it's always a pleasure. It's always an honor. Thank you, sir. And I look forward, if I don't see you before, I'll see you June 22nd, downtown Lee Summit, Bridge Space.
Well, I appreciate you so much, man. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Leavenworth, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Christopher for coming back to the show and for being a champion of the jazz arts. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends. Hey, jazz fans, Joe Domino here, the host of the weekly Neon Jazz Radio Show and regular interview series being produced and distributed from Lee's Summit, Missouri. We are quite excited to let you know about the first annual Lee's Summit Jazz Fest taking place this summer on June 22, 2024, at the Bridge Space located at 210 Southwest Market Street. There will be 8 robust acts, including the Back Alley Brass Band and the great Lee's Summit Jazz Orchestra. There will also be art vendors and food trucks to make this a must-attend event. All details can be found at www.bridgespace.us/jazz. We will see you there.
Neon Jazz.